This is Tracy Sue, and you are listening to What Would Tracy Sue Do? Where we ask better questions about things that matter. We are on our third podcast with me reading aloud from the book Soul vs. Ego Smackdown, How to Say Yes to Your Soul and Tell Your Ego to Suck It. I wrote this book in 2015, and I am revisiting it to possibly make it into an audiobook, and also because I need to read it again. So, let's continue. Oh, and by the way, quick note, you can get this on Amazon, or you can get it on TracySue.com. That's TracySiouX.com. Or Amazon, you can just search my name on there, or you can search Soul versus Ego Smackdown. It'll pop right up. Tangible soul purpose. You're here to create one spark between you and another. So is every other soul. Yet how do you create that spark is Yet how you create that spark is personal to you and your soul's purpose. This means of spark creation are many and varied. Your soul has some preferences for how it likes to generate energy and put off fireworks in the heart realm, in the earth realm. Not all of us gravitate towards scooting our feet on the carpet to generate static electricity and touching someone for spark creation. Some of us prefer sex or teaching, writing, painting, singing, mothering, relationshiping, crunching the numbers, designing dresses, putting together marketing plans, drawing cartoon characters, nursing or doctoring, mapping terrain, exploring the moon, lawyering, or punditing. You can create the spark in everything you do. The light of connection happens throughout your day while you're liking someone's baby picture on Facebook, dropping your kids off at school with a, have a good day, I love you, see you tonight, calling your insurance guy back, answering your email, sharing a kickboxing bag with your gym friends, laying in Shavasana with a room full of fellow yogis, texting an old friend, meeting with your colleagues, picking up the tab at lunch, making eye contact with the checkout girl as she bags your groceries, the peck you greet your husband or wife with when they come home from work, the snuggle on the couch with your toddler, the phone call with your mom, the hello between you and your neighbor, and the nod between you and the guy in the car turning left that says, hey, you can go first. Those are the sparks, one at a time, culminating in bigger and bigger light on the planet. What I love about this definition of a soul's purpose is that it is tangible and doable every minute of your day. You don't have to know the outcome of the spark you create between yourself and the checkout girl. You only know that it was created and it is good. But the change you want to see in the world, be the change you want to see in the world, Gandhi commands on bumper stickers. It's all on you. No pressure. It sounds like a great idea at first glance. Hey, if everyone were doing this, then the world would be amazing and happy and fed and safe, right? Yet the whole world isn't doing it, our ego is quick to point out, and we get all angsty and pressured when we feel like we're singularly responsible for changing the whole damn world. But the one spark soul purpose doesn't hold you responsible for the outcome of the entire universe. And it doesn't put all the pressure of your soul's purpose on one single project like a blog, book, or business. Project liberation. There's some real liberation in freeing yourself from feeling like your purpose is to write a book that will change the world. Because what if it doesn't? What if you do tune into your soul and you say yes and you follow through and you write that all-important piece of literature and you pour your whole heart and soul into it and no one notices? What does that mean about your soul's purpose? Does it mean that it wasn't really your soul's purpose and you were just confused and caught up in your ego? Does it mean that your soul betrayed you with false promises of your book having an impact? Does it mean that you had this one soul's purpose and now you've gone and blown it by doing it wrong or not being able to, quote unquote, make it happen? Well, from some perspectives, and certainly your ego's perspective, yes, it means all of that. You failed. No one cares what your soul's stupid purpose is. Three people read the book and one left a scathing review on Amazon that hurt your heart. You're crazy to listen to your soul and follow the loony voices in your head that fill you with delusional fantasies of grandeur and importance. But if your soul is to create a spark, then the writing of this magnificent piece of literature is one project with which your soul has used to live your purpose. Here's how it breaks down. The purpose is to create one spark. The method of the spark creation is writing. The project used to create the spark is a book. Which means that even if one person read the book, you created a spark. Even if the person who left a nasty review was touched enough that they took time out of their busy life and committed energy to your creation, a spark was created. They may hate it, but obviously your book triggered, they may hate it, but obviously your book triggered something in them that was raw and needed healing. Though you might never know it, it is possible that the universe used your book to trigger that healing, which will change them in some fundamentally positive way. Or maybe not. Please note, you're not responsible for that. You did your job. You created the spark. That was your only purpose in this scenario. Of course, book production is an extensive process that involves a whole host of souls. So let's walk through how many sparks you can create by writing and publishing one book. Remember, this book is part of your soul's purpose. There is you and the machine that you create on. You can picture energy sparks being generated and shooting into the atmosphere as light as you type every single word. The act of creation and manifestation itself is more than a spark. It's more like big explosions of light that cast itself into infinity. In the book, you write about other people's ideas, and that creates a spark between you and those other thinkers and authors. You write about characters, and that literally brings those characters into the energy of being matter or mattering. You talk to other people about your book, and that creates a spark between you and them. Of course, you're communing with the muses and the geniuses of creativity and inspiration, so sparks are flying everywhere in that process. Your soul is traveling to the spirit realms for intel while you sleep and bringing big, ginormous balls of sparky light back with her for you to use in the creation of this book. And maybe you have a few early readers who critique it along the way and help you hammer out some of the themes and flesh out the language. And there are collaborative sparks flying left and right during these interactions. In essence, you have brought what is spirit, an idea for a book, from the spirit realm and made it manifest into material matter. It matters. You mattered it. That, my friend, is an act of creation. And who creates? God. So what you have done so far is a miracle in and of itself. You mattered. Wait, this soul purpose project is only halfway there. Now you have to birth it into the world. You have these words on paper, but they need to find their homes out there in readers' hands. You might start shopping the book around with agents who then shop it around with publishers. A spark is created between you and every assistant, agent, secretary, designer, editor, and publisher who touches the email, query letter, or proposal. You might choose to self-publish it, so it needs a designer, cover artist, and an editor. There too will be sparks. Now you have to get this book into readers' hands. So you'll need publicity people, and you'll need to do interviews and podcasts with reviewers and people in your industry so that people know about your book. You'll have to send out requests for all of your friends to read your book and leave reviews on Amazon, and you'll post about it on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and maybe do a book signing here and there. A spark is created between you and every single reader. You and every single person who sees your post in social media, you and every single podcast host and all of their individual listeners. A spark is created between you and everyone who glances at you sitting behind your book at a book signing, even if they don't even stop to say hello. A spark is created between you and every eye on your marketing copy, your book title, or website. This was no small task that your soul required of you. No small task indeed. But your ego reminds you there are 350,500 books published monthly on Amazon. Your book hasn't yet turned into the New York Times bestseller of the year. It's profoundly unprofitable, and you feel like it's only a drop in a sea of books. Did your soul fail you? If you believe that your soul's purpose was to sell 10 million books immediately, then yes, your soul failed you. But what if you were mistaken? What if your soul's purpose was really to create one spark, and the creation and publication of your book created 100 sparks? Then, my darling, you're a brilliant, creative genius who just expanded light on the planet dramatically. And how can that be anything but a success? The outcome is your soul's enemy. The outcome is your soul's enemy, my loves. The outcome is the ego's game. If you're doing the soul project as your soul's purpose because you're trying to get one specific outcome, then you're really just setting yourself up for failure and disappointment. The outcome is your enemy because it is out of your control. You can influence the outcome with a multitude of doing and action and spiritual practice and mindset. To be sure, we are outcome influencers. Yet, the outcome belongs to God and the universe. We are very powerful players. Still, we are very powerful players among other powerful players who are also hoping for an outcome, which might conflict with yours. Your soul isn't motivated by the outcome anyway. He's motivated by spark creation, experience, and growth. So often, I have done this terrible crime to myself. I'll say, yes, to my soul's request that I take on a certain project, but I'll create an expectation of what that project is going to do for me. I will write this book, and it will get me on Oprah, and I'll become a world-class speaker, and I'll have enough money to support myself and my family. My soul wants me to do this, and so that's what my reward shall be. Yeah, but what if it doesn't go down like that? What if that's not the point of writing the book? I published the book a month ago. Why isn't Oprah calling? I'm such a failure. Oh, soul, why did you do me so wrong? What if my soul wants me to write the book for my own healing, my own spiritual growth, my own pleasure? Because remember, your soul's purpose is for your own happiness and growth. What if my soul doesn't have any interest in this book as a means to get fame or wealth or a spot on Oprah? Folks, probably your soul doesn't have much interest in those things. Some souls do, of course, but yours might not. The outcome is the ego's game. The dialogue goes like this. Soul: hey, let's write a book about dolphins. Ego: that sounds like a lot of work. What do we get out of it? Soul: well, we get to learn about dolphins and maybe even swim with some, and then we get to spend our days thinking about them and writing about them. I bet we could tap into some cool dolphin spirit guide energy, and we'll learn a lot about being playful that way. Ego: I only want to do it if we can score our own television show on the Discovery Channel. Soul: we could learn to be playful, and I think dolphins are also a symbol of creativity and love, so maybe we would learn how creativity and play lead more to love. How many copies of these books do you think we can sell? Soul: oh, and think of how much fun we could have if we made it a children's book and we worked with a talented illustrator. Ego: illustrators cost money. You don't know how to draw. Soul: oh, I know. We could take some art classes and learn to draw dolphins swimming and leaping and doing tricks. Ego: We don't know anything about drawing. What are you even talking about? Now we're going to take on an entire new art form for this money-sucking project? We don't have the time or the money for this stupid project. Soul. Ah! I'm trying to bring happiness here. Why do you have to say no to everything? Ego. Fine. I'll do it as long as you can promise we'll sell 10 million copies, make $100 million, and get our own show on the Discovery Channel, and it costs nothing to produce. The outcome is the soul's enemy. The outcome is the ego's game. Ego plays you. Let's talk about how badly your ego needs you to stay insane and how far he's willing to go to keep you stuck. This is a primordial creature within the most ancient part of your brain, remember? His concept of time is hunting in the daytime and being home before dark so the wild animals don't eat him. He wants to minimize socializing with other foreign tribes, only trading what he has to, because he desires to be as self-reliant as possible. All other people and animals are dangerous. He wants to follow the same routine, day in and day out, to minimize his risk. Rise at sunrise, gather, hunt, and make sure all work is done by twilight, and head back to the cave to root and sleep. This guy is terrified of fire and doesn't know what a wheel is. Those inventions require experimentation and adventure, and he is just not down with that. His soul's purpose, if he were to ever consider such an elevated subject, is to stay alive, beating starvation, animal attack, and freezing to death. He'd like to have sex every once in a while, but he's not sure why, since he has not yet discovered that sex leads to propagation of the species, so he's not so great at romance and courtship yet either. His vocabulary is also quite limited, often resorting to name-calling and banging you over the head with his trusty stick. Avoid risk. Stay alive. Let's talk about his perspective about how you spend your time. You stay up after dark. You interact with way too many people. You speak to strangers. You drive a car. You fly in planes. You want to buy and sell more than you need to survive. You use money, which is too abstract and intangible to depend on. You're at the mercy of political systems that are unreliable and intrusive. You don't get enough sleep. For the ego, everything about you is weird and terrifying. We know from Maslow's hierarchy of needs, parentheses, Abraham Maslow was a groundbreaking psychological researcher of human motivation and happiness. We know from Maslow's hierarchy of needs that this guy is on the lowest two need levels. Maslow teaches that before we even have an evolutionary consciousness that can conceive, let alone yearn for, a soul's purpose, we must have our fundamental survival needs met. Maslow illustrated our human needs in the form of a triangle, with the bottom being the lowest levels and the peak of the pyramid being in the highest. The needs have to be achieved on one level in order to progress to the next level. They go in this order. Physiological needs. Breathing, food, water, shelter, clothing, sleep. Safety and security. Needs. Health, employment, prosperity, family, and social stability. Love and belonging. Needs. Friendship, family, intimacy, a sense of connection. Self-esteem needs, confidence, achievement, respect of others, the need to be a unique individual. Self-actualization needs, morality, creativity, spontaneity, acceptance, experience, purpose, meaning, and inner potential. So you see, even opening this book and reading page one signifies that you are on, or at least toying with, the top tier of human evolution and consciousness, while your poor ego is still fixated on the bottom tier. Think about that for a second. In order for you to even have the luxury of contemplating and asking the question, what is my soul's purpose? you have to have achieved a level of human comfort and influence and affluence, as well as self-awareness and personal growth for the question to even exist in you. Take a bow. I'm applauding you right now. Still, here's the thing. Your ego is never going to grow out of level one or two. Physical safety and security needs. Ego's concern will always remain breathing, food, water, shelter, clothing, and sleep. But because he suspects your affluence and your higher level ambitions, he has become an expert at holding you hostage with the fears listed in level two: health, employment, property, family, and social stability. I'm pretty sure that the ego isn't actually on this level two, but he's aware of its impact and importance to you, so he uses it to ensure his primary level one needs. So here's how the inner conflict goes for most of us. Soul. Oh, I am so excited to write this book about dolphins. I think we're so connected to them in this higher consciousness spiritual way, and I think we can learn a lot from them about how to telepathically communicate, and there's some psychic phenomenon that they can teach us about. I think what I'll do is take off every Friday to focus my dolphin research and take a few trips to some really cool dolphin research facilities who are engaging in some groundbreaking research in the next few months. Then I'll take a 6-month hiatus from my job to write the book and hire a publicist to really get it out there. This is going to be so exciting. To which ego answers, "Oh my God, you can't do that. What are you, fucking crazy? You're going to be a terrible mother if you put all this time into one stupid book and your boss is not going to give you a hiatus. He will fire you in a heartbeat and no one wants to read such a stupid book anyway. And then we'll be publicly humiliated as the stupid woman who wrote a book about something no one cares about, who got fired and made her children hate her from sheer neglect, and then we'll die broke and alone." See how using that first and second tier of needs against you can really work to keep you stuck in your same job, doing your same parenting schedule, and never stepping out into a higher soul calling? Your ego is no amateur. He's been practicing this game for lifetimes, and he's got you pegged cold. He's really quite genius, which means that you and your soul have to learn his favorite plays and develop a game plan to outsmart his trusty tactics, which have been working on you for so very long. Sister, brother, your ego's been playing you. Slave master. Once I get this work done, everything will be okay, and then I can focus on my soul's purpose. I want to grab people by the shoulders and shake them when they tell me this lie. It's as if they're a record player stuck on that one grating lyric. Because that is what this is, just a stuck record repeating over and over and over. I don't have enough time. There's no truth anywhere in this statement. It's just a big fucking lie. And who's the liar? You guessed it. Ego. I don't have enough time. It's the ego's biggest and most effective lie. He's so freaking good at this lie that he has everyone in the Western world repeating it. This is his number one platinum hit. I thought maybe other cultures were escaping this one, but I went to Mexico and they were playing this hit tune there too. I can't. So busy. Too busy. Crazy busy. Someday I'll have more time. When things settle down. After this project. As soon as this happens. If only I had more time. When I have more time. Then I'll do what I want to do. No, you won't. Do you know how I know that? Because you don't have a time problem. You have an ego problem. You can't solve an ego problem with more time, or a better calendar system, or a time management program. All of those tools will just help you fill up your time with yet more bullshit that keeps you away from your soul's purpose. Because remember what the ego's motivating factor is? Same. So if you have more time, he'll just keep you busy doing more of the same. He won't be making more time available for doing any cagey, scary, soul-purposing. No, there will be none of that crazy talk. If you are not the master of your time, you are the master of nothing. That's what I tell my clients. But here, I'm willing to take it a step further. If your soul is not the master of your time, your ego is. For the vast majority of the Western world, ego is the master of time. He's a genius at it. He's not playing a kid's game anymore. He has the clock wrapped around your balls, and you feel the clenching of his fist daily with increasing pressure. Ouch! Part of the reason the ego is so easily claimed time as his domain is that the soul understands that time is an illusion invented by humans so that it can meet each other for coffee at the same moment. The soul's purpose rarely comes with a timetable deadline because time doesn't really exist. Oh, but the ego loves time. It's such a masterful weapon in its game against the soul. First, the ego loves to keep you busy, late, and rushing. You can practically see him rubbing his hands in wicked delight as he subtly keeps you running from one place to the other so that you literally don't have time to think, especially about your soul's purpose. Yes, you're always on the run and never have any time, and that's just perfect for ego, who knows that the soul's voice has often been referred to as the still, small voice. And that you have to slow down, get still, and listen for you to hear it. When are you going to have time to do that? You're just too crazy busy for sitting still and getting quiet enough to hear your soul whisper some craziness, some crazy ass plan into your gullible ear. Brilliantly played, ego. He's been doing this so masterfully to some of you that you haven't even noticed for decades. Decades! That's not his last move in time chess. Not even close, bud. He's also exceptionally good at filling the calendar with important things. Because your job as a person is to be everything to everyone, and that means all appointments, engagements, and obligations involving other people are important, leaving nothing for your soul's own purpose. Check. Oh, I know, love. It is so important to be at every soccer practice and every single book club and all the church functions, the potlucks, and every single networking lunch in town and plan every friend's birthday, or else you'll lose your job. No one will like you and you'll die alone. Remember? Ah, but now that you know this dirty trick, you can just develop a better calendar and a time management system and smush your soul's purpose in there somewhere. The soul giggles behind his squirrely hand. It's time to bring out the long line of emergencies and shit that can go wrong moves. I can keep her hopping from crisis to crisis and drama to drama for decades before she even suspects. Suddenly, you're having dramatic encounters with customers and subcontractors and coworkers that were never there before. Your spouse and children begin to revolt at the slightest hint of change emerging. Friends start thinking you're getting too big for your panties at the slightest mention of upcoming soul projects you mention. Your body begins to develop ailments and kinks, injuries and sicknesses as the ego manipulates it like a puppet on strings. Not enough to kill you, of course, but enough to keep you from making any surges forward with your newfangled soul purpose plans. Ego knows that drama, illness, and crises are fantastic distractions, and that no soul purposing will fit in even the best time management system if your life is mired in them. Checkmate. Soulful time. While your soul may not care too much about time, you, as the self with a capital S, better start taking this war on your time very seriously for the reasons I just mentioned. It's actually a very dangerous game with real stakes, including your physical and mental health, relationships, career, and business. Not to mention any higher gratification you might be looking for from being able to live your soul's purpose. It's time to take back the clock and become master of your time. This isn't going to be the easiest thing you've ever done, but it will be a life changer if you do it consistently. I have a 10-class e-course, Time Joygasm, which will change your entire relationship to time if you follow the steps. That can be found on my website at tracysue.com. For now, I'm going to give you as much of the info here as I can without straying too far off our topic. Time joygasm. We frequently hear people say, oh, I wish I had more time. Maybe this is one of your favorite go-to one-liners. No, you don't. Like you need one more hour to fill with work and other important tasks the ego has laid out for the time you already have now. What you really wish is that you experienced your time in ways that made you happier and gave you more pleasure. You don't want more time. You want to spend your time doing things you love doing and things that are truly important to you. You want more time to live your soul's purpose, to create the one spark in ways that bring your soul more meaning and joy. So let's look at some ways that you can create a time joygasm in your life. Pleasure drenching. Pleasure drenching. Do you ever wonder why your soul wanted to manifest into a human body? To become physical matter in this particular shape and form? Your soul, unhindered by physical matter, is far more light and high vibration than your physical body. Matter is slow and heavy. Matter can be damaged and harmed. Matter is vulnerable. Human bodies are high freaking maintenance. I've pondered this question many times, and I like to believe that one of the reasons is physical pleasure. We have many physical sensations that are unbelievably pleasurable. Orgasms alone are probably worth manifesting a body for. Hot baths, the smell of a baby's head, kickboxing, yoga, dancing, kissing, tasting dark chocolate, the crunch of popcorn in your mouth, the sweetness of a Jolly Rancher on your tongue, the smell of Oscar de la Renta cologne on a man, the visual appeal of wearing jewelry or a new hairstyle. My preference is pink. Holding hands, Warrior One pose, whole belly laughing, skipping, snuggling, the feel of sunlight soaking into your skin, your body being carried by the waves of the ocean, a baby nursing at your breast, sex, pulling on the perfect pair of jeans, wrapping your hands around your morning cup of coffee as you watch the sunrise, the smell of bark and grass as you wander off a trail. Being physical is freaking amazing for a soul. It's conceivable that your soul was partly motivated to be here for the sheer pleasure involved in being human. Let's then make a leap and say that more pleasure will make you more happy. Yes, finally, some spiritual advice that doesn't require you holding one position on a mat for 20 minutes every morning, trying your hardest to think nothing. Pleasure drench. I want you to put pleasure on your calendar everywhere, at least one pleasurable thing daily. I love a great book in a hot bath, reading before bed at night, yoga in the morning, kickboxing a few times a week, hiking, riding my pink cruiser bike around town, going dancing with my girlfriends, meeting with my friend Anna, my regular 2-hour bi-Sunday massage, a mid-afternoon meditation nap, sex, kissing, binge-watching Netflix, buying a new dress, and a million other things that make my soul sing. And yes, my soul sings during all of these activities. What is pleasurable to you? Do that. Often. Indulge in pleasure. Drench yourself in it. Easy versus hard. During my divorce, I had a rough summer. I plunged into poverty. I was making $600 a month and feeding my kids from the food bank. I was rushing everywhere I went in the belief that the harder and faster I worked, the more I would get done and the more money I would make. Slow down, I kept hearing my soul's voice whisper. Slow down. I rushed so fast that I got 3 tickets, 2 for speeding and 1 for not stopping at a stop sign. Slow down. I fell down some stairs, rushing from a massage to a medical appointment. Still, I did not slow down. Slow down! One day, I was rushing to the park for no real reason except that rushing was my default state, when I flew off my daughter's pink Barbie Razor scooter and broke my clavicle. That's when I finally slowed down long enough to hear my soul's voice. It was forced on me. I thought I would just get up and go about my business in the morning, maybe take an afternoon nap. That is not how it went down. I was in excruciating pain, and I wasn't allowed to push, pull, move, or carry anything over 5 pounds. I was in so much pain that I couldn't think. I couldn't work. Funny thing, my inability to do what I had been doing was a brilliant turn of events in which I had to figure out a new plan. At the time, I was doing crappy piece writing work. I had all of these assignments due, but they paid pennies and I was barely scraping by. Yet I had no time left to take on more work. I couldn't rush fast enough to resolve the fundamental problem. I was out of time and I didn't have enough money. It was a conundrum. When I broke my clavicle, my work ethic wouldn't allow me to miss my deadlines, though I was incapable of completing the assignments. I hired someone to finish them for me. I kept part of the pay. Hey, I think I just stumbled onto how people end up creating empires, I thought. My whole paradigm about my place in the business world and the marketplace shifted. As primary breadwinner, I no longer had the luxury of petering around in my business and doing crappy paying piecework. I needed a new plan, and that plan had to have me as the employer paying others to do much of the work. In other words, I flew off my pink Barbie Razor scooter as a starving artist and stood up a businesswoman and an entrepreneur. You know what I think? I think my soul had been giving me the secret all along. I had already started hiring some help for other projects, but I was refusing to slow down and listening long enough for her to really give me the answer to my own desperate plea. Help me. I've seen it time and again. Sometimes when you're refusing to listen, even though you're begging for help, your soul will insist that you listen because she came here to do something and you're not doing it, damn it. Time tithe. When I started my Year of Yes experiment, one of the first things that my soul told me to do was to get healing work done on myself. I was turning 40, had just finalized my divorce, and I was in desperate need of healing. I started buying massages on discount websites. I'd buy a $15 or $30 massage, and it was okay, except you get what you pay for. A massage can be a simple rub down, or it can be a profoundly healing experience. Tithe here, my soul started saying while I was on massage tables getting a rub down. Excuse me. Tithe here to this piece of God. The tithe is traditionally a 10% donation to a church or the place where you are being spiritually fed. I grew up with the principle of tithe and had tithed to a church the prior year as a law of attraction manifestation tool. Now my soul was telling me very clearly to tithe here, tithe to this piece of God. Your body is the temple of the Spirit who lives in you, Jesus told his followers. I am. Remember, my soul is the piece of me that is God, as is yours. So I committed to tithing 10% of every dollar that came to me to my own soul's healing. I also committed to tithing 10% of my time to my own soul's healing. What a fabulously healing year, which transformed everything. By putting my self-care in my budget and on my calendar first, it changed how I live my life. It changed the health and energy level of my body. It changed my emotional and mental ability to care for my children and manage my responsibilities. And it completely transformed my business into one of profit and legit entrepreneurship versus just playing around for extra income as I had been doing as a stay-at-home mom. The time tithe changes everything. Your ego is going to hate it. Do it anyway. Because when you put your soul first, all the other stuff falls into place. You get healthier. You get more physically fit. You have more fun, your business grows, you feel happier, and you start spending your time living your soul's purpose in a very gratifying and organic way. True values first. If you want to create more time in your life, meaning more pleasure in your time, put your true values on your calendar first. If you're committed to your soul's purpose, then related activities go on the calendar before other obligations. Haven't you noticed already that what you try to squeeze into your calendar last is the thing that just gets squeezed out first? Do you believe your soul came here for a purpose? Do you have a desire to fulfill that purpose? Then put it on your calendar first. I know some of you are looking at your schedule and you want to scream about the impossibility of spending 10% of your time pampering yourself and putting that time on the calendar first. Okay, scream. Done? Then let's get to the word no. Right now, you are making choices. You might not be completely cognizant of what your choices are, but you are making them by default nonetheless. You've been saying yes to other people's agendas for your life. Whether that's a spouse, boss, kid, friends, neighbors, or family, there are too many yeses floating around your calendar that should be no's. Those no's are important because that's what makes room for your soul's yeses. Here's an example for what I mean. When I was a young mother, I felt all this pressure to be the perfect mother. I would pursue my profession as a writer, but only after all the perfect mothering was done. I wouldn't allow it to interfere with taking care of my children. I would do all the carpooling, all the cleaning, and all the parenting. I would make sure that I didn't let other people raise my kids. Oh no, not me. I was raised Mormon, and good Mormons don't let other people mother their children so that they can pursue their own ambitions. I was teetering over the line to have any professional writerly ambitions at all. My ego was convinced that even dabbling was too much risk, and it would put me through hella inner mommy war struggles to even pursue the calling at all. After my divorce, I was suddenly mother and primary breadwinner, and I knew I better get my professional shit together to support my kids. Still, I faced this horrible scheduling problem. My daughter had to be at school at 7 a.m. My son didn't have to be there until 9 a.m. Then my daughter got out at 2:30 p.m. Then my son got out at 4. I was determined to keep physically fit, so I needed to go to the 9:15 yoga and kickboxing classes. Then there were the after-school kid activities that I was responsible for driving them to and from. By the time I got everyone to school and worked out, I could run my business between 11 a.m. and 2 p.m. then squeeze an hour of work in after I picked up my daughter, but before my son got home. I could devote 3 hours completely guilt-free to my business without infringing on my personal definition of motherhood and my personal commitment to my body. Dear reader, you are allowed to change your definitions and make new plans and new priorities and new commitments. Do that now. I really needed to make the money generating activities a more prominent feature on my calendar now. What was sucking up all my time? Driving kids. What is sucking up your calendar? You know who you are, neglecting your soul's purpose in favor of a menial driving position. Don't you dare tell me that this is your quality time, as my mother said once. I've been in that car. I know what goes on, and there is not some out... I know what goes on in there is not out of some after school special about how close parents and children can be. You're rushing and frustrated, and so are they. Everyone is hungry and everyone is tired. Truly, this was not my favorite part of parenting. In fact, it's my most loathed part of parenting. I don't want to spend my life in a car, driving to watch other people live their lives. There, I said it. Because parents, let me be clear on this. Watching other people develop skills and talents and live their purpose is not the same as developing your own skills and talents and living your own purpose. even if those other people are your children. Having established that playing chauffeur is not my soul's purpose and therefore not my true value, I negotiated for my co-parent to hire someone to take my daughter to and from school and pick up some of the after-school activity driving. This added 3 or 4 hours to my workday. My income now reflects that. I don't know what kinds of should-be no's are filling up your calendar. I don't know what choices you're going to make about your time, but I know that they need to be made in a conscious and intentional way. You're going to have to take a really hard look at your calendar and ask yourself whether each activity is your true value, your real priority. If it's not, you'll need to start saying no in service to your soul's purpose, or you'll never have time to live it at all. Which means that you're going to have to disappoint some folks, but your soul won't be one of them. And soon you'll realize how great that feels. One choice. When people make choices, it takes a considerable amount of brain power. Remember your ego and how much he enjoys the same routine over and over and over? You're wise to make use of that characteristic to keep him calm. You'll also get more done and enjoy it more when the ego isn't throwing a tantrum. Spontaneity, quote unquote, is in the upper levels of our needs, which means it takes quite a bit of planning and organization for you to feel safe and stable enough to be spontaneous. Spontaneity isn't a lifestyle or a personality or a character trait. It's more of an isolated event that happens irregularly. Otherwise, it's not spontaneous. I enjoy spontaneity as much as the next freewheeling creative person, but it's really not your soul's game. Souls, by nature, are intentional. You know that whole thing where spiritual people get to be flighty and directionless and change their mind all the time and change professions, like they change underwear because they can't commit because their souls are so carefree? Forget it. Their egos have just figured out how to trick them into thinking they're being soulful, when really they're just being directionless and unproductive. It's a favorite means of ego distraction for the spiritual types who like to believe they're following their soul by getting nothing done. Don't fall for that. Egos are harmless if they don't feel threatened, and one of the most stabilizing and comforting things you can do to keep your ego from messing with your soul's purpose is to create a stable structure for your life. When you do, your soul's soul creative activities as a routine, when you do your soul's soul creative activities as a routine, the ego eventually puts it in the same category, quote unquote, same. And therefore, for your ego, it is in the quote unquote, safe category. Eventually, he stops freaking out and sabotaging it. Bodies, minds, and emotions thrive on structure and routine. Creativity thrives on structure and routine. Professional creatives like designers and writers know that if they sit down to create at the same time every morning, that the geniuses of inspiration will inevitably show up during that time. People who don't know this believe that they'll just write that book when inspiration strikes. What a dumb idea. Inspiration comes when people make space for it to come. People who are fit and healthy understand that keeping a regular exercise schedule and eating plan is the secret. It's not bursts of hyper-exercise and a strict diet when they feel too fat that keeps them in shape. They make sure that they have what they need to build into their life. Someone who writes the same exact exercises in their calendar, same time, same days, from week to week, will see better health and fitness results than someone who takes a run every now and then. My kickboxing classes have remained on the same dates and times of my calendar for 9 years now, folks. 9 years. My yoga times are flexible, and therefore, I don't do yoga consistently. The secret to enforcing consistent habits is to make one choice. I don't ask myself a new question every Monday. Do I want to go kickboxing? Because I've already decided that I do go kickboxing every Monday at 12:15 p.m. That is sacrosanct. For anyone who asks to fill that spot on my calendar, I say, sorry, I'm already booked. My soul is super vocal during these kickboxing classes, and my body craves the fierceness of movement. There's no way I'm allowing other people to infringe on this soul time. And my ego? Well, she really likes to kick the shit out of a bag, so she doesn't argue much with my soul during that hour. It's a blissful hour inside myself where everyone is in agreement. It's sacrosanct. It's non-negotiable. People who own their own companies and become successful also keep regular hours and get great at what they do. No serious entrepreneur works at random hours in their sweatpants. It's a dumb idea. That person is just unemployed. A serious entrepreneur understands what their time limitations are, and they have goals and ambitions that fit between those hours. People who have steady, strong relationships also create structure around their schedules. They do not rely on see you when I see you to create strong bonds. They reserve time for each other, and they know that it has to be both frequent and meaningful if they want the relationship to thrive. People who are great divorced co-parents don't do a random parenting plan. Each parent knows exactly what their days and times are, and they create a stable parent-child schedule that allows the kids to feel stable and safe, even though they are going back and forth between each parent's house. People who meet their own goals and expectations have the sense to create a schedule for even creating their goals and expectations. They usually ritualize it in some way. Every year, for instance, my family and I host a dream board party for our like-minded intentional friends. At that party, we sit down and creatively ask our souls what we want for the coming year. Some of the goals and ambitions are tangible. Others are more subjective. However, we don't ever say, oh, this year, let's have a party in April. No, the ritual is calendarized during the week after New Year's. It's built into the yearly cycle. Our holidays are built into the yearly cycle, and our personal energy levels wax and wane with the natural cycles as well. Learn to use that rather than resistant. I'm telling you that about 80% of success is just consistency. The things that you consistently plan and make one choice about are the things that you will see the most success in your life. If you want to live your soul's purpose, instead of just planning to someday, this is the kind of choice making and commitment it's going to take to make it happen. Make one choice.